Broadcasting Corporation of Japan takes pleasure to present today's news in English. 9 enemy planes shot down over Kremlin. 19.
This is the morning program.
9 planes were shot down over Kremlin. The Japanese High Command at 19 announced.
Civic wartime.
Bomber formations fully escorted by fighters. Friday morning raided Kremlin, one of the key points in Kwansi province.
The news this morning.
In the raid, the Japanese flyers encountered.
Then you'll hear Nelson T. Johnson, the United States Minister to Canberra, formerly your ambassador to Burma, speaking in Chinese and in English. And then, after that, a special on-the-spot broadcast of a Sunday night entertainment for a live service somewhere in Australia, entitled Victory Bells. Now, the time in Eastern Australia is 1:01 on Monday morning, June 15th. And here is the news brought to you by John Roy. Australia today celebrates United Nations Flag Day. Flags of the Allied Nations flutter from buildings in all cities of the Commonwealth. A message from General MacArthur has been read in all churches. Prime Minister Curtin, in a statement on the significance of the day, said, quote, "This day demonstrates that we are resolved to win complete victory in this war, and also that we are determined to build a peace which will ensure security for all and establish international relations, economic, political, and legal, on a surer foundation. The waging of war is our immediate business. As each Australian takes part in the observance today, I ask him to put a plain question to himself. Am I doing all I can to win this war? Am I doing all I should in loyalty to all my fellow Australians and all that I owe to those men and women in other countries who are resisting to the death and suffering under the tyranny of Axis powers? I trust that the thought of our unity will waken in all of us a sense of our great obligation to each other. This day should strengthen our resolve when we realize that we are not single-handed or alone in the fight. We are part of a mighty army spreading from the front line of Harcourt to the cottages of America and Australia, from the RAF bomber stations in the British Isles to the engine room of the smallest freighter in the most distant convoy, from the daring Allied pilots on the northern Australian front to the factory workers in the Urals, and from the Chinese soldier to the Canadian artisan and farmer. Its ranks include the men in battle, the workers in the factory, and the people in their homes. We are all working together, and we must continue to work together for victory. Besides the waging of the war, we have a second task, the building of peace. This day should also strengthen our resolve that the cooperation, interdependence, and respect for each other which we are learning in this war should continue when hostilities have ceased. We are united by an identity of interest and purpose. We want to see a world in which the terrible menace of war has been reduced, in which the obstacles to cooperation and understanding among nations have been removed, so that all may live in peace, sheltered by justice and nourished by charity under divine will." Unquote. The Chinese minister to Australia, Dr. Xu Mo, said at a church service at Canberra that today was the first time in history that the flags of so many nations reflecting such a unanimous ideal had flown together. Behind each flag was the story of the hopes, aspirations, and traditions of the nations represented. What we must have in mind, added Dr. Xu, was one flag on which was written life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. An attack on Darwin by 27 Japanese heavy bombers escorted by from 12 to 15 Bureau South fighters is reported in the communique from Southwest Pacific Headquarters. Our interceptors shot down one enemy fighter and we lost one plane. The enemy attack was directed at an airdrome where slight damage was caused. The communique also reports Allied raids on Rabaul, where hits were scored on the airdrome and the dock area, and on Simberi Island, where shipping was successfully attacked. The Japanese planes came over Darwin at about 28,000 feet. First sign of the attack, according to an eyewitness, was a maroon dropped by the leader, apparently to gauge the wind. our anti-aircraft batteries opened up and quickly broke up the Japanese formation. 50 United States airmen who took part in the raid on the Philippines, made from Australia in April, have been decorated. 15 officers have been awarded the Silver Star for gallantry in action. 45 non-commissioned officers and men have been awarded Purple Hearts for efficiency, courage, and devotion to duty. Here are the names of the officers. Captain Paul I. Gunn. First Lieutenant Frank Bender, John Selson, Gustav Heiss Jr., John Lynn, James McAfee, James Mangan, Harold Moore, Thomas Talley, Bennett Wilson. Second Lieutenant John Keeter Jr., Malcolm Peterson, Edwin Townsend, Leland Walker Jr., Gerard Rowe. Second Lieutenant Keeter's award is made posthumously. His home was in Throgmorton, Texas. Purple Heart winners. Master Sergeant Herman Adams, Ray Oliver. Technical Sergeant George Bengal, Norman Cape, Alonzo Jones, Melvin Owen, Aidan Simmons, Henry Simple, William Weddy, Luther Word, and Staff Sergeant John Butler, William Crutchfield, Kenneth Gatewood, Kyle Moore, Arnold Thompson, Sergeant O.C. Cook, Kenneth Cooper, Lawrence Cooper, James Hillier, Jimmy Morris, Norman Sales, or Sally's, S-A-L-L-E-S, Marion Smith, Lionel Young, Alfred Hare, F-A-W-E, Nora Frequiz, F-R-E-Q-U-E-Z, Chester Hopper. I'll go back two names. These are corporals. Corporal Alfred Thor. Corporal Nora Frequiz. Chester Hopper. George Nelson. Robert Newman. Hodges Rigdon. Stephen Taylor. PSC. Francis Fowler. Joseph Paradiso. Francis Pryor. Apple White. And that is the end of the news from Australia.
The second front in Europe was expressed by Mr. Tomokazu Hori, spokesman of the Board of Information, on Monday at the regular foreign press conference. Asked to comment on the new Anglo-Soviet and Soviet-American pact, the spokesman declared that as far as the published contents of the pact are concerned, there is nothing new that is worthy of comment. It is only their repetition of wishes to help each other. Continuing, the spokesman said, as far as opening up a new front, if they wanted to do it, I believe they would have to keep it a secret instead of loudly advertising it ahead. Their real intention, therefore, the spokesman stated, must have been to appease those powerful groups who are advocating a second front in Europe. Questioned if he thought there might be a secret clause to these pacts, Mr. Hori replied, Foreign Secretary Eden said, there is no secret clause. During the past half year of the war, the United States has left all its military bases in the southwestern Pacific, and more than two-thirds of its naval power. The Yomiuri newspaper pointed out in its editorial this morning, Monday. The paper emphatically declared that the miserable plight of the United States is solely ascribed to the mistaken policy of President Roosevelt, who invited the war without any justifiable reason, in utter disregard of the patient peace efforts of Japan. Simply for attaining his own ambition, President Roosevelt plunged his country and his men into unprecedented calamity of war.
He's not only the enemy of the East Asiatic races,
but should be called the enemy of the American people themselves, because he has endangered the honor, tradition, and even the existence of the United States, the Yomiuri declared. From Buenos Aires, in his article entitled "The Imperialism with Feet of Clay," contributed in a recent number of the magazine Asia, published in New York, well-known American writer William Henry Chamberlain, well-versed in Oriental situations, freely described the inevitable fall of American imperialism in East Asia. Hong Kong, Shanghai, Manila, and Singapore, he said, were the four Anglo-American fortresses in East Asia. But they are now fallen and gone. Gone into Japanese hands. Reported successive Japanese victories in the War of Greater East Asia have greatly heartened the Nanking government of China, Mr. Chamberlain stated, adding, even certain elements in Chongqing regime are rather inclined to come under a Wen Qingwei government at Nanking. Under any circumstance, the United States should not fight for the restoration of Anglo-Dutch power in East Asia. Thus concluded Mr. Chamberlain. From Lisbon, Port Darwin was bombed by the Japanese. Japanese bomb formations carried out devastating air raid upon Port Darwin Saturday. Crushing fire was inflicted on port facilities and military objects in Port Darwin, according to the Melbourne Dispatch. This newscast, ladies and gentlemen, is coming to you from Radio Tokyo. From Lisbon, women and children of Sydney were advised by the Australian government to withdraw from Sydney. Reports from Sydney revealed Japanese submarine activities are responsible for the withdrawal, the Commonwealth government stated. The report said. From a war front in Shaanxi province, Shangzhou, enemy's important stronghold in the Chongqing trade war zone, was penetrated by the Japanese forces at dawn Monday and was completely occupied at 7 o'clock in the same morning. Shangzhou is an important town situated in the northeastern Jiangxi province and is also known as Kuangxin. With the Japanese occupation of Shangzhou, the Chongqing troops under General Fu Chuchun have now been totally frustrated. From the war front in central China, a powerful Japanese unit, keeping its activities secret, made a surprise attack on Qingxi, one of the key points in Jiangxi province, and succeeded in reducing the town Saturday noon. The walled town of Qingxi is situated east of Fuqiao and Linchuan. From a Japanese base in Shenyang province, Japanese army flyers were active all day on Saturday in Shenyang and Fujian provinces. Military establishments around Shangzhou were blasted by scores of direct hits. The Tiger magazine was also exploded by Japanese bombs. Yiyang, west of Shangzhou, experienced its first air raid on Sunday. Military facilities were severely burned. From Shanghai, the newspaper Xunxun, an organ of the Chongqing regime, in its editorial several days ago, severely attacked Britain and America for their feeble assistance to Chongqing. The paper said to the following effect, referring to the battles taking place in Sichuan, Jiangxi, Yunnan, and Hebei provinces, the Japanese army spokesman called them five major operations. What the Japanese army spokesman says is quite true, and we cannot be optimistic to the situation. It is a duty for the United States and Britain to put up joint front with Chongqing against Japan. We have the right to demand assistance from the United States and Britain. The Washington Telegram of June the 8th says that the United States is already forwarding trains to Chongqing, but we don't know when and where they will arrive. Britain and the United States have often praised our brave resistance. But the mere admiration of our bravery does not mean anything. We hope that the United States and Britain will put into practice what they loudly talk. From Canton, with the thickening of Anglo-American oppression being grand for the formation of a second front in Europe, following the conclusion of the Anglo-Soviet Mutual Aid Pact and a Soviet-American agreement, Chongqing has been internationally isolated. Chongqing is afraid that if the second front were formed in Europe, Britain and the United States may forget the East Asiatic Front. Since the Greater East Asia War means the life or death problem to Chongqing, General Chiang Kai-shek is frantically soliciting the United States and Britain to send airplanes and the other war materials to Chongqing, even upon the realization of the second front. The Chongqing regime claims that the continued Anglo-American assistance to Chongqing is the only way to stem the large-scale Japanese offensive. This is Tokyo calling. From Canton, in order to inspect the political situation in Canton, President Wang Qingwei of the National Government of China visited Canton, accompanied by Policy Minister Lin Po-shen Saturday afternoon. From Batavia, in cooperation with the rapid reconstruction of Java by the Japanese Military Administration, the Chinese citizens in Java are earnestly assisting in the economic activities of the military authorities, particularly due to their wholehearted support. The distribution of rice is being carried out smoothly. Their interest toward Japanese culture, particularly in the language, is also remarkably increasing. From Batavia, thanks to strenuous efforts of the Japanese troops following their occupation of Java, most of the railway bridges, numbering some 50, which had been destroyed by the enemy, have been repaired. And almost all the railways in the island have been recovered. By the middle of April, passenger trains were running as in pre-war times. It is expected that with the restoration of industries and economic conditions, the transportation of materials will be increased several times that of the present time. From Shenzhen City, it has been decided that operations shortly will be resumed at the Singapore Rubber Works, the largest rubber goods manufactory on Shenzhen Island. The facilities of the factory have been thoroughly destroyed by the enemy prior to the Japanese occupation of the island, but most of them have now been repaired thanks to the untiring efforts of the Japanese engineers. According to Mr. Takashi Makane, Chief of Repairs Corps, all the repair work will be completed in one more month. The factory has a great productive efficiency, and plan is underway to make it a large synthetic factory for rubber goods by establishing an automobile tire factory in the future, so that sufficient supply of rubber goods will reach various countries in the co-prosperity sphere. From Hong Kong, 6 months have elapsed since the occupation of Hong Kong by the Japanese. The former British Crown Colony now presents a new picture of peace and fervor. Shipping and fishing industries have been restored to normalcy. At present, fishing in Hong Kong waters is being handled exclusively by the Chinese, while fish freezing works are operated by the Japanese, who are planning the establishment of cold storage in the center of Hong Kong. Port facilities have also been repaired by the Japanese. Half County is coming back to the port city again. Several thousand tons of damage and sinking vessels have successfully been restored and repaired at the dockyards in Hong Kong. From Manila, the first harvest of Taiwan rice is being reaped in the Philippines. Taiwan rice was transplanted in the experimental farm in the outskirts of Manila
under the direction of military administration of England of self-sufficiency in rice. Under the guidance of Japanese experts, Filipino farmers succeeded in transplanting Taiwan rice, bringing bright future for the agriculture of the Philippines.
Now here is the news read by John Morris. The Australian government and people join with the deepest pleasure in the celebration of the day set aside by the United States government in honor of General Douglas MacArthur. Affirming this today, Prime Minister John Cotting said that the warmth of the spontaneous welcome extended to General MacArthur on his arrival in this country had widened to a feeling on the part of the Australian people of the greatest confidence in his leadership, to respect for his character, and esteem for his manly qualities. Mr. Cotting continued, quote, "Were these times of peace, the United States could have no more popular ambassador than this soldier, who has won not only our hearts, but our strongest regard. Australians have no doubt that General MacArthur's mission will succeed. As I said before, General MacArthur declared that one day he would return to the Philippines, and that was a firm pledge we would help him keep. I repeat that under General MacArthur, the forces of the United Nations in this theater of war will go on to victory." Unquote. General MacArthur has issued the following statement. Quote, "The action of my fellow countrymen in commemorating this day rededicates each one of them to the immortal ideals of West France, duty, honor, comfort. It reaffirms the implacable will of our great nation to maintain its inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It pledges our lives, fortunes, and our sacred honor, so that ordinary man shall be made secure. The fortuitous circumstance that the day I entered the service of my beloved country should have been the one selected to focus this great patriotic outpouring of free men on the march fills me with humble thanksgiving. I ask that each participant say a simple and silent prayer that a merciful God will bow our steps." Unquote. Today's communique from General Headquarters reports that an allied flight carried out a night attack on the aerodrome at Rabaul and Gatmata. Our war correspondent Hayden Leonard says that in the Gatmata raid, some of the planes flew low to attack targets near the aerodrome. Gatmata is halfway between Rabaul and Leh. Closed rationing for all Australians comes into operation on Monday. Books of ration coupons for clothes and for tea, which has already been rationed, are being distributed to the people today and tomorrow. The rationing scale of coupon values announced this morning indicates a substantial reduction in clothing purchases compared with peacetime standards. 104 coupons are available over a period of 12 months, and here are some typical coupon values. For men, an overcoat, 30 coupons, a suit, 38, shoes, 12 coupons, shirt and collar, 12, at 6. For women, overcoat, 27 coupons, a frock, 12, shoes, 8, stockings, 4, at 3. Special arrangements have been made for children and expectant mothers. A special coupon scale will be announced for industrial children. Restrictions on the advertising of ration goods are announced in national security regulations issued to some. No suggestion must be made that the price of goods has been reduced, and bargain sales of ration goods are prohibited. The Australian federal government is speeding up the delivery of arms to units of the Volunteer Defence Corps, which is the Australian counterpart of the British Home Guard. Army Minister Ford today praised the patriotism of the men of the Volunteer Defence Corps, who are neither obliged to serve in the Australian military forces nor eligible to join the Australian Imperial Force in giving up their leisure to serve their country. Units of the Australian Women's Army Service, led by their controller, Lieutenant Colonel Sybil Irving, were inspected today by General Sir Thomas Blaney, who is the General Officer commanding Allied Land Forces in Australia. It was the first time Sir Thomas Blaney had seen the Army service women parading together as one unit. Addressing the women, General Blaney said, "The Army welcomes the help and cooperation of the Women's Army Service. You are part of the Army itself, Peter. You've earned the right to serve, and the greatest thing any person can do is to serve his country. The first George Medal presented in Australia was bestowed yesterday on Captain P.G. Taylor for an action performed 7 years ago on an air crossing of the Tasman Sea. Originally, the Empire Gallantry Medal was awarded to Captain Taylor. This was surrendered to be replaced by the George Medal. Captain Taylor received the award for bravery on a flight with the late Sir Charles Kingsford Smith. Their plane was crossing the Tasman Sea when one of the engines shut out and another began to leak oil. Captain Taylor crept out along the wings and with a thermos flask transferred oil from the dead motor to the one that was leaking. He did this several times and the plane was able to get safely to Sydney. That is the end of the news from Australia.
Australia today celebrates United Nations Flag Day. Flags of the Allied Nations flutter from buildings in all cities of the Commonwealth. A message from General MacArthur is being read in all churches. Prime Minister Corbyn, in a statement on the significance of the day, said, quote, "This day demonstrates that we are resolved to win complete victory in this war, and also that we are determined to build a peace which will ensure security for all and establish international relations, economic, political, and legal, on a surer foundation. The waging of war is our immediate business." As each Australian takes part in the observance today, I ask him to put a plain question to himself. Am I doing all I can to win this war? Am I doing all that I should in loyalty to all my fellow Australians? And all that I owe to those men and women in other countries who are resisting to the death, who are suffering under the tyranny of the Western powers? I trust that the thought of our unity will awaken in us all a sense of our great obligation to each other. This day should strengthen our resolve when we realize that we are not single-handed or alone in the fight. We are part of a mighty army spreading from the front line of Kharkov to the capital of America, Australia. From the RAF bomber stations and the British Air Force to the engine room of the smallest freighter in the distant Columbia. From the daring Allied pilots on the northern Australian front to the factory workers in the U.S. From the Chinese soldier to the Canadian artisan and farmer. At length, the duty men in battle, the workers in the factories, and the people in their homes. We're all working together and must continue to work together for victory. Besides the war and the war, we had a second task, the building of peace. This day should also strengthen our resolve that the cooperation, interdependence, and respect for each other which we're learning in war is so hindered when hostilities have ceased. We're united by an identity of interest and purpose. We want to see a world in which the terrible menace of war has been reduced, and in which the obstacles to cooperation and understanding among nations have been removed, so that all may live in peace, sheltered by justice, and nourished by charity after divine will. An attack on Darwin by 27 Japanese heavy bombers, escorted by some 12 to 15 Zero-type fighters, is reported in a communique from Southwest Pacific Headquarters. Our interceptors shot down one enemy fighter, and we lost one plane. The enemy attack was directed at an air dome where flight damage was caused. The communique also reports a live raid on Rabaul, where hits were scored on the aerodrome in the dock area, and on Simberi, S-I-M-B-E-R-I, Simberi Island, where shipping was successfully attacked. But the engagement was not yet over. 12 Zeros appeared and attacked the Americans, but 8 were shot down without the loss of a single United States plane. 2 United States pilots shot down 6 of the enemy aircraft. 1 pilot carrying 3 with a long burst of cannon fire. Our correspondent at an undisclosed operational base tells how 2 Japanese warships were quickly destroyed in the Coral Sea battle on May 7th. An aircraft carrier sank within a few minutes after having been hit by bombs and 10 torpedoes. A single bomb from an American plane destroyed a Japanese cruiser a few minutes later. The first clash with the enemy in the Coral Sea battle, our correspondent says, occurred on May 4th, but the real battle did not begin until 3 days later, exactly 5 months after Pearl Harbor. Land-based planes cooperating with the Navy had reported observing two big Japanese invasion forces.
On the morning of May 11th, news was flashed to headquarters that a big enemy aircraft carrier was steaming south with strong naval protection. With remarkable speed and timing, naval bombers, dive bombers, torpedo bombers, went into action, and within half an hour, the aircraft carrier and the cruiser had been sunk. Bombs at the aircraft carrier stemmed the stern. Torpedo bombers flying through heavy anti-aircraft fire aimed with deadly accuracy. The enemy ship heeled over and within 10 minutes was on its way to the bottom. And it's estimated that about 2,500 men were drowned. Seeing the fate of the aircraft carrier, the cruiser began to zigzag in an attempt to escape. One American dive bomber peeled off within. The first bomb was followed by a terrific explosion inside the cruiser, and it was assumed that the bomb fell down the funnel to the bowels of the ship. 50 United States airmen who took part in the raid on the Philippines from Australia in April have been designated. 15 officers have been awarded Silver Stars for gallantry in action. 35 non-commissioned officers and men have been awarded Purple Hearts for efficiency, courage, and devotion to duty. The officers are? Now, a little spelling for all these names instead of reading the names themselves. First, Captain P-A-U-L-I-G-U-N-N, 4-I-Gun. First Lieutenant Frank B-E-N-D-E-R, Frank B. Bender. John D. F-E-L-T-H-A-N, John D. Feldman. G-U-S-T-O-N-E, M, H-E-I-S-S, Jr., Gustav M. Heist, Jr., John R. L-I-N-N, John R. Lynn, James B. M-C, A-S-E-E, James C. McGaffey, James H. M-A-N-G-A-N, James H. Mandan, Harold V. M-A-U-L-L, Harold V. Moe, Thomas T. B-A-L-L-E-Y, Thomas T. Kelly, Bennett G. W-I-L-S-O-N, Bennett G. Wilson, Second Lieutenant John J. K-E-E-R, Jr., John Van Peter, Jr., Malcolm E. P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N, Malcolm A. Peterson, Edwin C. C-O-W-N-S-E-N-D, Edwin C. Townsend, Leland, L-E-L-A-N-D, A, W-A-L-K-E-R, Jr., Leland A. Walker, Jr., and Howard B. W-E-S-T, Howard B. West. Lieutenant Peter's award is made posthumously. His home was in Throckmorton, C-H-I-O-C-K-M-O-R-T-O-N, Throckmorton, Texas. The Purple Heart winners are Master Sergeant F-I-R-M-A-N, S-A-D-A-N-S, Sherman S. Adams, Master Sergeant Ray A. O-L-I-V-E-R, Ray A. Oliver. Technical Sergeant George H. B-E-N-G-A-L, George H. Bengal. Norman L. C-A-T-E-S, Norman L. Tate. A-L-O-N-Z-O, J. J-O-N-E-S, Alonzo J. Jones, Melvin E. L-W-E-N-S,
Melvin E. Owen, A. D. N. N. L. S. I. Double N. O. N. S. Aidan L. Simmons, Henry S. S. I. M. C. E. R. S. Henry S. Simples, William B. W. H. E. Double R. Y. William B. Wary, L. U. C. H. E. R. D. W-O-R-D, Luther D. Word, Staff Sergeant John T. B-U-T-L-E-R, John T. Butler, William R. E-R-U-C-C-H-S-I-E-L-D, William R. Crutchfield, Kenneth W. G-A-C-E-W-W-D, Kenneth W. Edward, C-R-Y-I-A-L, A-N, M-W-O-R-E, Cyril A. Moore, Arnold M. C-H-O-N-G-S-O-N, Arnold M. Thompson, and Sergeant Guy M. C-L-A-N-C-O-N, Guy E. Clanton, O-C, C-O-O-K, O-C Cook, Kenneth A. C-O-O-P-E-R, Kenneth A. Cooper, L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E-H-C-O-O-P-E-R, Lawrence H. Cooper, James W-M-I-L-L-E-R, James W. Miller, Jimmy D. M-O-R-R-I-S, Jimmy D. Morris, Norman H. S-A-L-L-E-S, Norman H. Sallis, M-A-R-I-O-N, K. Smith, Marion K. Smith, and Lionel, L-I-L-N-E-L, Lionel G. Young, Y-O-U-N-G. Corporals Alfred L. F-A-W-E, Alfred A. Thor, N-O-A-H, F-R-E-Q-U-E-Z, Noah Sequez, Chester L. H-A-T-C-H-E-R, Chester L. Hester, George H. N-E-L-S-O-N, George H. Nelson, Robert H. N-E-W-M-A-N, Robert H. Newman, H-O-D-G-E-S, K-R-I-G-D-O-N, Hodges K. Rigdon, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-L-T-A-Y-L-O-R, Stephen L. Taylor, and Sergeant First Class Francis M. F-O-W-L-E-R, Francis M. Fowler, Joseph A. P-A-R-A-D-I-S-O, Joseph A. Paradiso, Francis H. C-R-I-O-R, Francis H. Pryor, and Arthur J., W-H-I-T-E, Arthur J. White. The award to Sergeant Morris is made posthumously. His home was in Jonesboro, Louisiana. Staff Sergeant Ralph E. Moser, Staff Sergeant Ralph E. M-O-U-S-E-R, has also been awarded the Silver Star for gallantry in action on February 23, 1942, while on duty as an operator in the lower turret of the Flying Fortress, engaged in an attack on shipping in Rabaul Harbor. Captain David C. Rawls, David C. R-A-W-L-S, has also won the Silver Star for gallantry in action on December 7, 1941, while piloting a Flying Fortress from the United States to Honolulu. And that is the end of the news from Australia.